You're broken down and tired of living life on a merry-go-round. And you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we're gonna walk it out.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to WOLB 1010 AM Talk Radio. This is Carol Mileta of Team Radio Baltimore with another edition of Parenting 411, where we share information parents need from sources they can trust. We have another great show for you today. First, we'll be talking about diversity and inclusion in the workplace and in social settings. Then we're going to transition to schools and the social settings our children must navigate. Before we get there, though, I want to thank all of our listeners for your overwhelming response to our last show on blended families. You will recall that we heard from Dr. Dwayne Mangum, or Dr. D, as he likes to call himself, who is a consultant, pastor, and author of Blending to Make It, Ingredients for a Successful Blended Family, along with Mrs. Courtney Williams, who was a lifestyle blogger and mother and stepmother of three, who was recently featured with her beautiful family in Essence magazine. For those of you who called, emailed, and reached out for more information, I want to tell you that Dr. D will be hosting the Straight Talk seminar about the blended family every Saturday in July. As you will recall, he has a lot of energy and a passion around this topic and promises to share practical, therapeutic, and spiritual principles that you can incorporate into your blended family life. And of course, you can learn more about how to follow Courtney at www.courtneynwilliams.com. Now, the Straight Talk Blended Family Seminar will be held at the Imagine Me Family Worship Center. And for July 7th, the 21st, and the 28th, that will be at the Christian Unity Baptist Church, which is at 11822 Park Waldorf Lane. Number 519, that's in Waldorf, Maryland, from 10 to 3 p.m. And on July 14th, there's going to be a change in location, and they will be meeting at the Waldorf West Branch Library at 10405 O'Donnell Place, Waldorf, Maryland. And that session will be from 10 to 2 p.m. Tickets are $20, and you're going to get a free copy of Blending to Make It, Ingredients for a Successful Blended Family. And I can tell you that would be $20 well spent, particularly if you find yourself in a blended family right now. So I encourage you to visit ImagineMeFamilyWorshipCenter.org, and you will find all of the information you need on this workshop. So let's get on to today's topic. Speak to understand, building bridges and creating community. I know many of us have heard the expression seek to understand, but I want to get to the importance of speaking to understand because, let's be honest, the way we communicate with each other, it really does help to convey when we're communicating that we truly are seeking to understand others and not merely seeking to confirm what we already believe we know about others. And I'm sure you know what I mean sometimes when we speak as if our truth is the truth. So here to kick off the discussion is talented communicator, blogger, and author Randy Bryant, whose recently released book, Never Says, 25 Phrases You Should Never, Ever Say to Keep Your Job and Friends. I have to tell you, Randy is an astute observer of humans interacting, be it from her childhood friends and family members engaging in discussions of race, politics, or other issues of the day, or throughout her educational endeavors, including master's and doctoral studies, and her professional life as an educator and corporate trainer. She has a keen interest in cultural understanding and communications, which followers of her blog, Beatnik 24, know all too well. She is also a loving wife and dedicated mother, and I am thankful to say a friend of mine. Welcome, Randy. Hello, Randy.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you. Yep.
Great, great.
Thank you so much. So how's everything going?
Everything's great. So happy to be here today.
good, good. Well, listen, tell our listeners about who you are and what you do professionally, and tell them a bit about Beatnik 24.
Well, I've been a corporate trainer for over 15 years, where I developed customized training solutions for corporations across the country. And my focus, though, has always been on communication, sociolinguistics, diversity, and inclusion. And I've blended those because if you can't speak well to people, then you certainly can't make a diverse workforce feel included. I also, later in my life, indulged myself and started a blog called Beatnik 24, which is primarily for African American women and men, middle-aged African American women and men, where we focus on ideas, issues that are facing us today. And so it just provides a safe space where we can vent, share, and just kind of support one another. I found when I was on social media and also reading the major magazines, because most periodicals are not owned by us, I think there is a pressure to oftentimes not state how we really feel. And so I noticed that although I had some very active friends in the community on social media, they weren't saying too much about key events and issues in the Black community. And I realized that was because our social world, particularly because of social media, is oftentimes extremely diverse, where you're communicating with people with whom you're extremely close to and have known for 40 years, all the way to your mailman and your son's teacher, Sunday school teacher. And you may not be comfortable sharing your views in that arena. So I wanted to provide a space in Beatnik 24 where we felt comfortable sharing things that are going on in our community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's
and then I wrote Never Saves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
No, I was going to say, I was just going to say to everyone, it really is popular, and I certainly encourage you to look it up.
Oh, please. I think Beatnik 24, I've been quite encouraged by the response. And, you know, it's really the followers that keep it going and are all the discussions that happen there. I think we all are growing in that community.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're going to tell us about Never Saves?
Well, Never Saves. Never Saves came about because as I traveled across the country training people, I realized that most people live in their own silos. We grow up, go to school, go to church, participate in extracurricular activities with people who are very similar to who we are. And then we go off to college or we go to the workforce and we are expected to communicate and to be effective in the workforce with people that are very different from us culturally. And we're expected to perform well. And oftentimes, we don't know, we're very uncomfortable with difference. That is a normal human reaction to be uncomfortable with difference. And so we react the same way we do any time out of fear, where we either flee the situation, which means you see in workforces and in lunchrooms across America a very segregated staff, which is not good for productivity, or you see where people are together, but they sometimes fight and say things that are inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that, you know, after classes, people would say things to me like, you know, I've never been friendly. I've never had a friend who was gay, or I've never had a friend who was Black, or I never had a friend who was Jewish, and so on. I don't know what to say to these people. I'm very uncomfortable. And it got to the point where I would say, you know, everybody at core is the same. We all love and want to be loved. We all want to be respected. There's just a few key phrases that you should never say. And that's where I came up with the term never say, which actually just got trademarked last week. So it's officially trademarked the term.
Awesome. Awesome. So you talked a bit about Beatnik 24, which, you know, I know that diversity and inclusion comes up often. What other
Yes.
ways do you share your message of embracing diversity and actively practicing inclusion with others?
Well, just in my own family, we travel quite extensively. It's where any of my discretionary income goes because I want my children to be exposed to the world and to understand that people are very different from them, and they see the world from a different lens. Mm-hmm. And to have appreciation that just because people see things differently from you, it doesn't mean that they're wrong or you're right. It just means that the lens from which they see the world is different.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This reminds me a little bit of kind of Anthony Bourdain, as I just heard tragically that he passed away, of his way of trying to see the world through food and appreciating the diversity in the world. And that's kind of what I've tried to give my family. But on a broader note, I am oftentimes having, we call them Beatnik 24 salons, where we discuss issues that are affecting our country today. And, mm-hmm. and as you know, diversity and inclusion is a hot topic and a huge problem. And so we have little salons where we discuss issues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Never Says I'm on a book tour. So there are a lot of discussions around there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, it's interesting that you had mentioned Anthony Bourdain, and it certainly was very sad news that we all woke up to this morning. And I saw a lot of interesting tweets and quotes where people were just coming to terms with what they thought he meant to us. And one I liked was from Michelle Norris, and mm-hmm. she's from NPR. And she said that it was supposed to be about food, but that was just the gateway. His shows explored and explained the meat and the gristle of deep issues like opioid addiction, post-colonialism, colorism, greed, secret wars, and always the humanity found in a shared meal. So, I thought that was really special. And she tapped into something that you just talked about as well, that, you know, there's humanity in all of us, and that we all have differences, and it's really a matter of everybody recognizing that, because even those that are in the minority in a particular place, they're the ones that are looked at as different. But I mean, from their experience and the people they know and the places they've been, the majority is different. So, you know, it's like who gets to decide, you know, who should get to decide that their way is the standard and everybody else is different.
So. Right. And a lot of Never Says come from that space of people wanting things to be as they see it. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, one of the Never Says is, you know, who's the husband and who's the wife?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to a gay couple. And it's because they're looking at things through their own construct and want things to be in the way they see things. And so oftentimes we are always trying to have things a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, another Never Say is, you're very different from those people. Like mm-hmm. when I was growing up, for instance, that was something that was often said, you're not really black.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As if there is, like, you know, being black is monolithic mm-hmm. and there's only one way to do so.
Right, right. Now, I'm curious, does the reception of your message now, the way you talk about it now and in the forums that you find yourself in now, is it different from your earlier experiences with corporations and organizations?
Absolutely. Completely different. I think early on, the focus was more on just creating a space where people would embrace diversity and inclusion. And it was almost more like a cheerleading session mm-hmm. where we would get together and say, you know, diversity is great. And it was more of a numbers game
mm-hmm.
and trying to convince people that this was the way to go. And not really much, though, was accomplished as I reflect upon it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did do that. We got the numbers, and we found that we were not prepared to actually work together.
Mm-hmm.
And so now the approach is not just theoretical. It's more practical.
Mm-hmm.
And the reception, I would say, has been quite the two very different reactions.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some people who are hesitant to talk about issues of just difference,
mm-hmm.
and they're incredibly uncomfortable. And then there's some who are almost desperate to create change, people who are either feeling isolated at work or, you know, you have corporations. I mean, we're seeing every single week where a major corporation is, you know, having to deal with issues of not integrating in their workforce.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they are wanting practical and real solutions and wanting to talk about it and wanting to make a change because they recognize that they have to. It affects the bottom line.
Now, I want to remind our listeners that you're tuned in to Parenting 411 on WOLB 1010 AM. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can call 410-481-1010, 410-481-1010. Right now, I'm talking with Randy Bryant. She is an author and blogger, and she we are discussing her recently published book, Never Says. So share with us, I'm just curious, some Never Says that just really seem to resonate with people and that, that you get a lot of discussion around when you go out and talk about the book.
Oh, it depends on the crowd, but I would say that I don't see color.
Oh, yes.
Is one that a lot of people have heard frequently and are, it comes from a place usually when people are trying to be kind, so it doesn't come from a bad-intentioned person. Actually, none of these never says do. People usually are saying these things thinking that they are being kind. So I do not see color, or there's just one race, the human race, or America is a melting pot. All of those are kind of in the same genre where people are just trying to suggest that there is no difference.
Right.
And that they don't see difference and they treat you accordingly. And, you know, in the book, I have a section where I say what is said and what people hear, because I think that people don't realize that what they how what they say affects other people.
And, you know, that one, I don't see color, is never a phrase I ever use. And when I did hear people say it, I was like, oh, I kind of accepted it in the spirit of my whole relationship with them, that they're kind and whatever. But I wasn't really struck by how damaging and unintentionally offensive it could be until I was working on a workshop, and this was, you know, back when we first launched our company, Gardner Parenting Consultants, and we were doing a workshop on cultivating cultural awareness in your children. And so we had we read the book Black Baby, White Hands, and it's by Jaya John. And so the author was adopted by a white family, and, you know, and he loved his family and had a, you know, had a great experience and all of that. But they were really of the we don't see color, you know, philosophy. And so that's how they raised him and all of that. And he was like, wow, I mean, I want you to see my color. It's a, you know, it's a part of me.
Because the rest of the world is seeing it.
Yes.
Too,
and he's like, you mean to tell me that this aspect of my being that I'm proud of, we want to just discount, we want to take that off the table? And so, and this was, you know, from his well-meaning parents. And so that's when I really, that's when I really saw that, wow, that's not really a compliment, or it's not a great thing to say that, because
you're, it speaks to your discomfort.
Yes.
When you try to act as if something isn't there, you're trying to tell the world that you have no problem with it. But what you're actually saying is that you do have a problem with it by trying to act as if it does not exist.
Right. And just the idea that, well, we're going to take away that aspect of you, but on the other side of the table, we're not going to take an aspect away of me, you know.
It's very, we don't realize the damage it does with things like that. Just as I, you know, I didn't talk about this in the book, but we talk about oftentimes in some of the salons about just the whole name, when people are stripped of their names because they're trying to assimilate more into society. And so the first thing people, immigrants, do when they come to this country is they change the name, you know. And so you know someone's name is not necessarily Sue, but they've done that to blend. And so, you know, your name so much speaks to who you are, not just who you are, but who your family is oftentimes. In the seminars that I conduct with Never Says, one of the exercises we oftentimes do is we talk about our names. You know, from where did you get your name? Is there a sentimental value with it? And so, you know, often there's always a story. There's always a great story about a person's name.
Mm-hmm.
And to think that we take that piece of someone's identity,
mm-hmm.
you know, so early on, oftentimes in life, and don't think about what that does, or when teachers don't make the efforts to pronounce someone's name correctly.
Yes.
And you see people, you know, children get frustrated and they'll say, well, you know what, just call me Sam,
mm-hmm.
Because they don't like hearing their names destroyed. And, you know, as you realize what damage that does to people when you say your identity doesn't matter enough to me
mm-hmm.
to learn how to pronounce things correctly,
mm-hmm.
The message that sends and how that affects people throughout life, I think we start doing things differently and, you know, making a commitment to actually seeing people and embracing diversity. Because that was the problem. And the back in the day,
mm-hmm.
embracing diversity was what it really meant, and I think oftentimes it still means, is that minorities or anyone who was different
mm-hmm.
had the job of assimilating as much as possible, from the name to the hair to the dress to
mm-hmm.
the behavior. And so embracing diversity really meant, okay, if you're different, hide that difference as much as possible, which is mm-hmm. not embracing diversity. It's quite the opposite.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, you mentioned, do you ever get an opportunity to talk with children about never says that they experience?
That's such an interesting question, Carol. The most requested follow-up to never says is that I do this for children,
mm-hmm.
Particularly high school children.
Mm-hmm.
So I do casually get to speak with kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't officially conducted a seminar with children yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they definitely, you know, they're not at a stage yet where they're so desperate to get along with their peers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult for them to say when things are hurtful.
Right.
But right now, I would say a key issue is the N-word, you know, because of the popularity of hip-hop and rap,
mm-hmm.
the N-word has become popularized. And so you see kids of all races using that word.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a discussion around, an active discussion with a youth, middle school and high school, is that appropriate
right.
for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And
my answer is no.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that is a big thing. I hope you will explore it, though, with teens and young adults. I know it's kind of funny. You talked about the name, and my son, he has a popular, both of my sons, they have long names that mean a lot to us, but mm-hmm. they've been mispronounced throughout their lives, and so they both are graduating high school this year, and so that when one went to graduation rehearsal, that was the last thing I said. And I said, "Then make sure they pronounce your name properly." And so
wow.
he's like, okay.
Exactly.
He said, okay, I will. And he kind of, it wasn't until this year that he would say a little more, you know, it's his name. He would pronounce it properly. And then, but
mm-hmm.
you can call me the short name, but my full name is. And so he did. And sure enough, at graduation, it was just music to my ears. They pronounced it.
It means a lot. It does. And recognizing that, and that is a part of diversity. That
mm-hmm.
is a part, you know, it starts really with the name.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
simple.
Yes.
And I'm finding children do care more and more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, okay, well, now I'm going to welcome our next guest, because there are a few things I want to talk about in an open forum with both of you, but I want to introduce Tonda here. Tonda, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, and I want to tell our listeners a little bit about you. I had the pleasure of meeting Tonda during our early days of parent education in affiliation with the Parent Encouragement Program, or PEP, based in Kensington, Maryland. And during and since that time, Tonda was actively engaged in guiding young people as a Girl Scout leader and through a church-based college readiness program. And I'm sure this work served as a catalyst for her founding of Wisdom in Minutes, a consulting and education organization that provides valuable insights and resources to students and their parents on topics such as optimizing high school, the college admissions process, this new phenomenon called adulting, which is probably a whole nother show, And NIA Parenting, which stands for Nurturing Independence and Achievement. Tonda holds master's degrees in business administration and organizational development and has completed training in parent education, youth development, and college admissions counseling. And finally, I know that she cherishes her role as a wife and mother to two accomplished young women who have gone on to gain acceptance at elite institutions of higher education. So, again, I thank you very much for joining us, Tonda.
Thank you.
So, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what you do at Wisdom in Minutes?
Well, at Wisdom in Minutes, our goal is for the students and families we work with to never have that moment when the students come home, look at their parents holding a degree or a diploma, and wonder to themselves, what in the world am I going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
We want to make sure that students come through and they understand where they want to go, and they can use that idea of where they want to go when the education is through, what career they might be interested in, to guide and explore their educational opportunities, and also to hone in where they really want to go, so that by the time they have the degree, they also have a job title, mm-hmm. one or two job titles they're looking for, and they know very clearly what their next step should be.
Now, what experience helped you to see the need for this support for teens and parents?
Well, as you mentioned, I was a Girl Scout leader for 10 years, and it was a church-based troop in Washington, D.C., which meant that we were pulling from D.C. public schools, Prince George's public schools, Montgomery County, and also the charter schools. But we also had some of the big name private schools, Holton Arms, Stone Ridge, National Cathedral, St. John's.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the girls got to be about in 10th grade, 9th and 10th grade, they started applying to really wonderful summer programs. And they started asking me for references.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always say, certainly, send me a resume. And they'd look at me like I was crazy.
Mm.
And I realized that this was a hole that existed not just in one particular school system, but across the academic world, that there are some things you need as soon as you start looking outside of the school system for your support, but you're not taught those things during your school experience.
Mm.
And so the idea of the education beyond academics
okay.
was born.
Okay. And now, I'm sure you know all of us have heard of the race to nowhere and just the worry that parents have about the level of stress that high schoolers have today. So what's your take on how high school is set up and its relevance to what students can really expect in college down the road?
Well, the race to nowhere is really all about how people are being pushed and pushed into AP courses and IB courses and really big study obligations
mm-hmm.
without any reference to where they're going, without any reference to what they really need. Just this idea that you have to run as fast as you can and jump as high as you can continually.
Mm-hmm.
What I find is that with African-American students, a lot of times the opposite is true, that they don't expect us to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't say, you know, you really need to take AP courses.
Okay.
But the fact of the matter is, although you don't need a full plate of AP courses, it is important to have one or two
mm-hmm.
so that you can show that you are doing the work that challenges you.
Mm-hmm.
And colleges want you to accept the challenge and work to a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that you need to be challenged in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that supports your goals.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are trying to become a veterinarian, for example, what you just said is that you need to make sure you take AP biology. And there's a whole ladder of courses that goes to that.
Mm-hmm.
But you do not want to come through and not take AP biology. You don't need to just say, I think I want to be a veterinarian, and leave it until college to explore that. So there's a balance to be struck.
Right, right. And so part of what you do is help teens and their parents understand that.
Yes, and help the teens to actually decide in what direction they want to be challenged.
Okay.
If you're trying to go into journalism, you really don't need AP biology. That's a different issue.
Right.
If you're trying to go into law, there's a set of things you need to make sure to take. So the question is, where do you want to put your emphasis? What kind of things interest you? What kinds of things will you feel like it's worth it to work hard?
Okay.
And then go work hard in that area.
Okay. And how do you share this information and your insights with teens and parents?
Well, I have been, as a speaker, going to youth groups, women's groups, men's groups at different conferences. And I also give these workshops at schools, community groups, and churches.
Okay.
In fact, coming up on the 23rd, I'll be at Good Hope Union United Methodist Church.
Okay.
And that particular event is open to the public.
Okay. Okay. Now, now I want to open up the discussion with the three of us. And like you mentioned something, a sticky point right there with about how often students, African-American students and maybe, you know, other groups as well, aren't always guided toward the AP courses or things like that. So I want to ask, as a parent, how have you had to confront less than inclusive moments like that over the years with your children in school? I'll start with you, Tonda, and I'd be curious what you have to say too, Randy.
Well, I actually went through K through 12 with my children in public school, and I had a much higher level of expectation than the schools did.
Okay.
And so what happened was that I would just go in and what I really recommend is that you create a matriculation plan for your child, your own academic plan, separate from anything the school says. You take theirs as a basis and mix in the graduation requirements. But you put in the things that you want your child to take based on their career aspirations, their interests.
Okay.
And that changes the conversation.
Okay. How about you, Randy?
I think it's very important to show up at the schools. I think it's important because, you know, there's implicit bias everywhere. And as a former teacher, what I can say is that just like any other job, we give attention to the squeaky wheel. And if teachers know that the kids that they're teaching have parents that are very involved, they will treat that child differently. And I'm not saying that's right, but this is a fact of reality. If you do not show up, if the teachers do not feel your presence, because teachers are overworked, they have such a lot on them and are asked to do far too much than time allows. And so certain things will fall through the cracks, and you don't want it to be your child. So being involved and present, just showing up, letting them know that this child is loved and have parents who have high expectations, really, I think, is important. But I've experienced, my kids have been in public and private schools, and I've experienced where the expectations I feel were lower, not of them always, but oftentimes of them, but also of us.
Okay.
So I had one teacher who said that she thought that my youngest could just take, not just pull him out of Spanish. And, I don't think that she would have done that if she felt that I would have had the reaction. And then as a teacher on the inside, I saw kids that were moved, actually demoted. We're talking about AP. Kids were in classes that were basic level classes because they had no one advocating for them. So oftentimes the kids that are in the classes that are AP or honors, are it's not because the kids are necessarily the brightest children, but they're the children who have parents that are advocating for them.
And I agree totally with that. And we talk about that a lot with parents. And it's something that I practiced as well. I mean, I had an introductory email at the beginning of the year with all of the teachers. I loaded up my I created groups for each of their teachers so that at any time that I needed to speak with them, I could. I wouldn't have to scramble. when I needed mm-hmm. to let them know something. But I did that, introduced my husband and myself right away, and, you know, told them little tidbits, interesting things about them to really kind of, I won't say humanize them, but, you know, to really just give them more than just, you know, the student that sits, you know, in the second row, three seats back, and
but
whatever.
But still, that word that you use is significant. Mm-hmm. Humanize them. It's actually quite a significant word, because mm-hmm. we relate to people that look like us.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
there is a dearth of African-American students, particularly African-American males.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes humanizing your children.
Mm-hmm.
Is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I definitely was effective. So I agree with what both of you all have shared. Now, do you think to follow on? I'll start with you, Randy, because you had talked about having been in public and private schools. Did you see a difference between how diversity and inclusion was implemented in those places?
No.
Okay. Okay.
I saw no difference. I feel as if private schools make an effort to say that they embrace diversity, and they certainly will have a mission statement, whereas a public school may not.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, diversity and inclusion is about people, mm-hmm. and it's about people making the effort to really do the work to ensure that people are included.
Mm-hmm.
So in every system that I've ever seen, they may, yes, have a 15%, you know, they'll boast numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I oftentimes see that those parents don't feel a part of the community.
Mm-hmm. 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 What
and
do you think,
while there is diversity, there is no inclusion.
Right.
Well, I really go back to the idea that if you had a piece of land
mm-hmm.
and you were getting a house built on that piece of land, you could call in the major builder for the area, which would be the public school system, or you could call in a luxury or specialty builder, which would be the private school network.
Mm-hmm.
However, the getting what you want mm-hmm. in that house
mm-hmm.
really depends more on your showing up regularly than on
yep.
what builder you get.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you just say to the builder, Mr. Johnson, I want so many bedrooms, so many bathhouses on this site, call me when I can pick up the front door key. You're going to get a lot different result from if you keep going in and you say, Mr. Johnson, I hope you remember that I wanted this here and that there. Mr. Johnson, I hope you understand that I want this color and I want this style and I want this room a little bigger. This isn't looking like what we talked about, Mr. Johnson, and I want this and I want that. You're going to get much closer to the result you want. And if Mr. Johnson happens to have a whole bunch of gray paint left over from an earlier job and you're not around,
right,
guess what color your house is going to be
mm-hmm.
versus you're going in and saying, no, I wanted this to be green and I wanted this to be blue, and I don't understand why you're putting gray everywhere.
Right, right. No, that's a great analogy. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Parenting 411 on WOLB 1010 AM. I am talking to Randy Bryant, author of Never Says, and Tonda Bean, educational consultant and founder of Wisdom in Minutes. So now, what do you think parents ought to be looking for when they're selecting a school and they do have concerns about a meaningful diversity and inclusion? Randy?
I wouldn't just look at the numbers that the school boasts.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to visit the school just in off hours. I would ask them, do you have an open door policy now that we have, you know, shown interest in your school? And go to the playground. Are the kids of color, are they interacting with everyone? Or is there a group of kids of color that are off by themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes, like I have my son, for instance, went to a school, one of the private schools that he went to, actually both, he's still in every single magazine that they sent out. You know, he's long since graduated.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they represent the diversity to be something very different than it is. So I wouldn't just look at numbers, but also do people feel included? And are they a part of the organization?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or they feel a part. And if you could find any former students, like I'd like to speak with some of your graduates and see how their experience was. Because
mm-hmm.
oftentimes, you know, they will say, I never felt a part of that school. Yes, I got a great education. but there is no connection mm-hmm. with the school.
Mm-hmm.
It never felt like home. And also with the parents, because one thing I was going to say is that I do think that it's difficult to be present at the school as parents, sometimes because we feel uncomfortable mm-hmm. and we don't feel a part of the community, so we don't speak up as quickly as others. And we just have to get over that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Sometimes. Yes. Yes. Tonda, did you have any thoughts?
Yes, I really think that going in to compare the numbers to the reality is very important,
mm-hmm.
especially to see who is in those extra curriculars. When you go to a play before you go to the school, see who's in the play.
Mm-hmm.
Go and see who's in the band.
Mm-hmm.
Go and see who's in that top-ranked math group and who's in the top-ranked reading groups.
Mm-hmm.
Go and see, and go to the not just the open house, but if you can go to a PTA meeting,
mm-hmm.
then you get to hear what the real issues are in the school, not just diversity issues, but is there a bullying issue? Are the kids having problems with too much homework? You'll hear all of that at the PTA meeting, but never at the open house.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a good idea for sure.
And can I add one thought?
Of course.
Also, I would suggest looking at the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that a school's curriculum do not at all embrace diversity. And so if the school K through 12, the only time they're really embracing, you know, African Americans are talking about it, is slavery and Martin Luther King,
mm-hmm.
Then they are not embracing diversity. And they are not interested in ensuring that all children are reflected in what they learn.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they are reading off, if they're on their reading list, are there authors of other races on that list? And are there female authors? And are there, you know, so is there diversity represented when they study history, or, you know, ensure that our history is not just reflected as if it started with slavery? And even words like slaves and being enslaved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, are they truly taking the time to ensure that the curriculum is something that speaks to all children?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I agree. Now, do you all have any thoughts on how schools can start the dialogue about differences before children get out into the real world? Because I'm thinking, you know, in the lower grades, because they shouldn't really be thinking about, or just learning, about how important it is to value others when they're getting ready to leave high school or when they're getting ready to leave college and go into the workforce. Are there any interesting things going on in schools that you know of in your respective areas? Like Randy, anything that you know of?
Any interesting things that are happening? I do believe that I know, like, my son's school definitely went and visited and worked in neighborhoods across San Francisco and didn't keep them in just one area. And so I think that allowed them to just have different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think for children, experience should is more important than just talking about it. Because then I think that oftentimes schools make people almost a caricature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it becomes, oh, it's the Chinese New Year, and that's all that they learn about, you know, Asian Americans
mm-hmm.
or Asia as a whole, or it's Martin Luther King Day, and so where people are not presented as a caricature, but where they are really having experiences with people that are different from them, and
mm-hmm.
it's just seen as a part of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly is a good idea, especially it's just important to be familiar with the local population that a school
yes.
is situated in as well. I know I was looking when I was kind of researching for this show, I've seen a couple of things that are going on. There's something called the Schools of Opportunity, which is a project that started out in New York and in Colorado as a pilot. And so what these schools are really trying to do is they're very, they're really trying to get the inclusion piece right, which is what I like. They're moving past getting the numbers in, which you had talked about as well in the beginning of the show, to really bringing them in, incorporating diversity or consideration for diversity in curriculum, in discipline, in discipline policies as well. And they've been having some success at these schools. And then there's a series of charter schools. It's Citizens of the World, which is something that I hadn't heard about until this week, where they, too, are really trying to create citizens of the world among their students. And so they are interested in bringing students in who are diverse and in their case, from a lot of different countries and things like that. But, they're not stopping at getting them into the school. They're leveraging these differences in the classroom. And what I'm hoping, because a lot of times when schools start talking about diversity, they kind of go international instead of, and that's important, don't get me wrong. But also, it's because, again, I think there's a discomfort in recognizing there's a lot of diversity among Americans. And, to recognize those as well. And show that those differences are valuable, and that people that are in different groups, they're from different parts of the country, or they live in different zip codes within the city or whatever, that those differences are valued as well. That's what I'm really excited about, the new schools project, and to some extent as well, the Citizens of the World. But that's what I'm really interested in, because that more and more, I just feel like this country, with all that's going on, we're like afraid to recognize and deal with the fact that there are a lot of differences that need to be respected among Americans.
Well, there's also the trend in our education system, and, we have waves and troughs in the way things are taught.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last few years, there's been a big emphasis on math and reading,
mm-hmm.
and we have actually left off teaching social studies, geography, and history.
Mm-hmm.
And those particular areas are where you have a straight-up study of diversity.
Sure.
Because you're looking at different ways that the earth is formed and the ways that those people in that area adapt
mm-hmm.
to their weather conditions and geography.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get customs that base off of that, and all that sort of thing gets wrapped into a good social studies, history, and geography kind of curriculum. Now, what I am seeing is that some people are recognizing that,
mm-hmm.
and I'm hoping that that will take root. But there's also the character education piece that's being brought in.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking that a lot of times the character education says, treat everyone well, but they don't really get as far as the social studies curriculum is.
Mm-hmm.
So, as parents, a lot of times what we have to do is add that in on our own in different ways.
Mm-hmm. We do. And yes, I we definitely do. And I hope that in an effort to create community, like that's been very important to me about community. Like when I've looked at schools for my children over the years, I always wanted to know about a sense of community, like everyone feeling valued. Does everyone kind of know, have a sense of what's acceptable in the community, so that everyone feels that they're getting a good education, that everyone feels that they're respected and being nurtured and have equal opportunity and equal access to the services. And I think that, whatever the school offers. And I think that what you're talking about with the character education and kind of marrying that with the social studies really gets to that. I mean, about how we can begin to create community. I mean, that's just something that I think is really at the core of, some of the stuff that we're wrestling with right now. I mean, it's all the from Black Lives Matter to MAGA to Me Too and enough is enough. It really kind of gets down to, we've got to come to terms with recognizing and embracing the differences the different perspectives that people have in this country and the different ways that people are experiencing our country. So
that means we need to speak up for sure, though.
We need
to be very involved and ensure that people are addressing. I mean, I think that if a high school is not discussing Black Lives Matter right now, they're not attending to our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's a discussion where people are debating the issue, you know, it was so interesting because one of my sons in high school, they had a debate about slavery and if it was good or bad, and they were acting as if they were from the South and the North. And I said, you know, I don't understand the obsession with continuing to talk about slavery when there's so many issues that are debatable right now that our children right now are dealing with. And even so, even if people are against the Black Lives Matter movement, to create discussion, you know, intelligent discussion, which is what I never say is an attempt to do, to provide people with, you know, the language to have discussion around issues that exist. It seems as if in America, just like you said, we don't want to discuss diversity. We also don't want to embrace the entire what's going on right now. We are scared to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's imperative that that happens.
I agree. Let's see. We have a caller here. Let's bring her in. Good afternoon, caller. What's on your mind?
Carol, it's Linda McGee.
Oh, hi. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
I have a question about whether or not any you or any of your commenters have any ideas about how to keep kids encouraged when they're seem to be experiencing a rise of negative behavior and, you know, racist or negative behavior aimed toward them. How do you keep them encouraged and still thinking about building a community?
Okay. Tonda, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, this is where I think a lot of history comes in. If you can give your child the wonderful teaching examples of some of our heroes and heroines of the past who have gone through a lot of things and come through, then they'll see that they can go through and get through also. The other thing is that you have to be very clear about whose stuff this is.
Mm-hmm.
That racism business, it's not their problem. It's that other person's problem. Manifesting is yelling at me.
Mm.
So it's not really my issue. It's their issue. I have to deal with it in that they are trying to push it on me.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fine. I am as God made me. I am as what God meant me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a problem with that, so it's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to make sure that they don't internalize the mess that's coming towards them.
And so how do they confront it, though? Because it is the other person's problem, and they're trying to make it a problem in a child's life. So what kinds of things might they do?
And so a lot of times it just has to do with asking questions.
Okay.
Ask questions back. What is your problem with that? You know, and you stand at a point of absolute certainty that you are fine.
Okay.
So that you're not asking, what's wrong with me? Why don't you like me?
You're asking,
what's wrong with you?
But
you can't stand somebody who doesn't look exactly like you.
Randy?
And the other question is, how far, because some people are into conformity without even thinking about it. We should all be white. And once you get to everybody's white, then does everybody need to be blonde? And then does everybody need to be male? You know, there's all this conformity. And so if you start asking questions like that, well, you know, would it be all right with you if everybody around you looked exactly like you? And then if they did, how would you tell one person from the other? And help them see how silly that is.
Randy, what are your thoughts?
I think that dealing with racism at a young age is traumatizing because I experienced it as a person who was oftentimes one of the only in classes. And so I think the best way to support our kids is to share how painful it is so they can actually, you know, I think sometimes we oftentimes want to brush over the pain. And I'm thinking, you know, that must really hurt. It's already hard enough to feel somewhat different in your class.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this person doing this. So I think, one, addressing the pain and talking about it. If you can share any experiences personally that you've had, because I think sometimes they feel that they're alone
mm-hmm.
in that. And so when you say, look what I've been through and I overcame, and then you could have, you know, other experiences, of course, throughout history. You can say, unfortunately, throughout history, this is something that we've had to take on and something that you probably will continue to have to take on. I'm very frank with my children about the issues of race because I think it arms people when you're prepared,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's like going into any, when someone, I provide the tools so they walk into the world knowing that this is something that exists. It doesn't mean it's in everybody, but it's something that you won't have to get used to. And it doesn't speak to who you are. But I share experiences. I also try to ensure that they are connected with people who are in similar situations that they are,
mm-hmm.
whether it be a formal organization like Mocha Moms or Jack and Jill, or just reaching out to people. I mean, and saying, I have a kid who's a vast minority in a school system. I would love to get together with you guys. So they know that there are people all over who are experiencing what they've experienced. There are also, you know, blogs online where kids are writing about it. But I think the biggest thing is that children don't want to feel as if they're alone and they're experiencing something that's unusual. Also, I would provide a support system. Go to the school and talk to them about how they deal with racism.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes schools need to understand that calling a kid a racist name, the N-word or anything,
mm-hmm.
is completely different than calling someone dummy. I have found that some schools try to, you know, put it all in one bucket.
Mm.
And so even before your kid starts there, but while they're there, how do you deal with racist incidents? And this is what I'm expecting. I had one friend named Dwight who his kid was called the N-word, and he took the book, skips my mind, where there's all those pictures of black people being hung.
Mm.
And he says, when we hear that word, this is what we hear.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we feel.
Yes.
So this is how, so I expect the punishment to be, you know, to match that.
Right.
And so, and also, you know, I've always let my kids know that they have a freedom fighter on their team. Like they're not
mm-hmm.
dealing with this alone
mm-hmm.
and that I will deal with it on the end, on how I can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I let them know that under no certain terms should they accept
mm-hmm.
people being racist to them. And so I provide them, you know, because this is what I write about, sociolinguistics, I do provide them with words. So that's
mm-hmm.
another part of their toolkit, comebacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you so uncomfortable?
Right.
Let's focus back on you.
Right.
And so, you know, providing your kids with a toolkit.
Yes.
And letting them know that people have overcome racism for 400 years and that she or he will do so as well.
Yes. Well, I
they will make it in spite of.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I feel like it's important to give them some environment. And if it's not the school, let it be somewhere else. It might be the church. It might be a club.
Yeah.
Where they're not a minority.
Yes. Well, I agree.
Someplace, some day of the week, they should not have to be a minority.
Wow, I love that. Okay, well, listen, ladies, I have enjoyed this conversation. I really could talk another hour, I'm sure, but I want to remind our listeners that you can learn more about Randy Bryant and her book and just a lot of things that she's doing. You can go to beatnik24.com. That's BEATNIK.